RadioArchives.com presents The White Raven Murders, An Adventure of Dan Fowler, by C.K.M. Scanlon, read by Milton Bagby. In the days of J. Edgar Hoover's Untouchables, one lawman took on the super criminals even Elliot Ness couldn't touch. Dan Fowler, G-Man. The greatest FBI special agent of his generation, Fowler operated nationwide, hunting down spies, kidnappers, counterfeiters, murderers, and other dire threats to law and order beyond the jurisdiction of local authorities. Assisted by the youthful agent Larry Kendall and brave Sally Vane, Dan Fowler crushed crime with an infallible combination of scientific criminology and punishing Tommy gun lead. And now, Dan Fowler's thrilling adventure, The White Raven Murders. Chapter 1. Unlucky Day. Ralph Benson, Assistant United States Attorney, stood before the mirror in his bedroom and pulled his tie knot tight. The ends didn't meet by 3 inches, and he quietly swore. His wife turned around from the vanity. "Ralph," she chided. He shrugged. "I'm sorry, Cora. I couldn't help it. Things are in such a state it's a wonder I can do my job."
"I know you're worried," she said, and smiled understandingly. "It's that attachment on our new house, isn't it? But we'll iron that out somehow, darling."
Benson was trying the necktie again and having better luck. "There's something else, Cora," he said a little reluctantly. "I didn't tell you because, what's the use in both of us worrying?"
"About what?"
she asked over her shoulder. He turned around to face her. "My dear," he said, "you know a government attorney doesn't make big money. And building this house has strapped us, even doing it on a shoestring as we did. As if that wasn't enough, a couple of weeks ago a salesman steps on one of Gail's blasted roller skates, takes a swan dive down the porch steps, and sues us for $10,000.
"Yes, I know all that," Cora said. "Well?"
"That tied up our bank account, but perfectly," Benson went on, walking over toward her. "It was plain luck that I still had a little cash left, because they tied up my paycheck, too. To top it all, yesterday the furniture company called me up. I tried to explain, but their credit man's hard-headed, stone-hearted. He doesn't want excuses, just cash." Mrs. Benson closed her eyes and breathed slowly.
"You don't mean they'll take the furniture out of the house, do you?"
she asked weakly. "They could," Benson said. "Well, anyway, the company that holds the mortgage on the house was more sympathetic. They at least gave me 30 days to come up with the money."
"Oh, Ralph," his wife said mournfully, "what in the world are we going to do?"
He gave her a grin, as big a one as he could muster. "Oh, I'll think of something," he tried to say airily. "It just proves one thing. Here I am, a lawyer who advises people to steer clear of things like this by getting insurance coverage, and I neglect to do just that for myself."
"We'll get out of it,"
Cora Benson tried to cheer him up. "After all, if you can't draw your salary, it's accumulating.
Maybe you can arrange to have the attachment on our bank account lifted. There ought to be something that can be done."
"There is," Benson said, "a petition to the court to release the attachment, as you said. I'm not going to run away. I hate to do it, though. You know how it is with a public official, and I didn't like the idea anyway." Mrs. Benson stood up and faced him.
"Ralph," she said, "I know it has you worried. It worries me, too. But let's try to forget it just for today. You can't do anything on Sunday. Let's go on to church and later we'll go for a ride. We'll put the whole affair out of our minds. And Ralph?"
"Yes?" he asked with more cheerfulness than he felt.